Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How much do you know about your favorite works of art and about the people who created them? Official accounts abound of the lives of Da Vinci, Van Gogh, Picasso, and Kahlo. But my guest today was drawn as much to the weird but true details of their lives as to the common discussions of their artistic education, evolution, and influences. And she has collected everything she's learned in a new book filled with factual stories of murder, forgery, trickery, and the creative geniuses who committed them. Elizabeth Lundy is a journalist who writes about art and architecture. Her new book is called Secret Lives of Great Artists. Elizabeth, welcome to Think.
Thanks for inviting me, Chris. This is fantastic.
So I have to imagine, if you're writing about art, maybe all throughout your career you've collected these weird facts, or was this something that you went to full-time once you decided you wanted to do the book?
Mostly I had to go to it full-time, and there's no source book for this stuff. You have to go through the entire two-volume book, biography of Matisse, and dig out the little details about shooting people with a pea shooter when he hated being a lawyer. So it's buried in there, but it's fun to find and it's fun to collect these things.
Yeah, I guess his dad wanted him to have like a fallback career, basically.
Well, his dad wanted him to be a lawyer. He thought that being an artist was disreputable. You'll never have a good career. You'll hang out with loose women. And so he insisted that his son study law. And he was actually sort of apprenticing in a law office, and he was so bored that he would lean out the window and hit the passersby with spitballs until he finally got so stressed out that he got sick and ended up in the hospital, and that's when he took up art.
So I know that there are a lot of myths about particular artists that turned out not to be true. Was there anything that you discovered that you were really disappointed because it would have been such good fodder for the book?
Well, it is disappointing to learn that Monet did have cataracts, but that wasn't until he was an old man.
So it has nothing to do with why he painted the way
he painted. It has nothing to do with he had been painting that way when he was very young and his eyesight was particularly keen. That's just how Monet saw the world. So, but he did, in fact, have cataracts, but he was much older, and they did tend to affect the color of some of his later paintings, but that's all that had to do with his art.
And a lot of these folks, I guess, used, not a lot of them, but they used sort of tricks to get their work done. You write about Jan van Eyck, and the mirrors that you see
yes.
in so much of his work may have been there for a reason.
They may have been there for a reason. There's a theory by a contemporary artist, I'm looking up the name, I can't remember his name, but there's a theory that he was able to use mirrors and flip them around to trace outlines, and that this was what allowed him to have such great depth and perspective and verisimilitude in his paintings. This is very controversial. Not everyone agrees with this, but this is a theory that's out there. So.
And it was something that you think would have been kept a secret even if that was what he was doing. So
that's the theory, that it would have been kept a secret, that people would not have understood. Ooh, they're messing around with mirrors. You know, this was an age where they still burned you if they thought you were a witch. And so it would have been something that he would have kept secret as a trade secret. So, again, that's the theory. I read things where people were really onto the mirror thing, and I read other things that people thought, you know, he was just a particularly talented draftsman. So it's hard to know with that one, but that's the theory in any case, that the mirror in the back of the Arnolfini portrait could have been a tool of the trade.
I was really surprised to read that Botticelli was essentially forgotten for three centuries after he died.
Completely ignored. People like Raphael, Michelangelo, Leonardo assumed prominence, and Botticelli was essentially forgotten. And it wasn't until people started to revisit that work that they came to appreciate it again, and it started to assume prominence again. This happens to a lot of artists. Caravaggio was completely ignored for several centuries. His artwork ended up in attics and basements and
The Kimball,
eventually. But, you know, his art was not collected in museums until he had been rediscovered as important. For a long time, nobody paid any attention to him.
It's always exciting to go over there and see the card sharps because it seems, it's just so, you can stand and stare at that thing for the longest time.
He's amazing.
And it might have reflected his real life.
He would have known that scene very well. For those that aren't familiar with the card sharps, it shows a young man who's obviously very young and very well-dressed, maybe in from the country, you're not sure, and he's in a tavern playing cards with two very accomplished card sharps. And one is reading his cards and signaling to his friend, and the friend is pulling cards from back of his pants. And they're about to cheat him. And the thing is that Caravaggio spent most of his time not painting and not asleep in Roman brothels and taverns. And so he probably saw this scene play out dozens of times. This was his world, the world of these Roman brothels and bars. This was his life. This was his life. He knew it.
And he was, I guess, orphaned by the plague?
His father, grandfather, and uncle all died on the same day
Wow.
of the plague when he was fairly young. And his mother survived. We don't know how long she lived. She did apparently survive the plague. We don't know much about Caravaggio's early life. There are some real blanks there. He did apprentice in, I believe, Milan, but then there's a blank, and there are rumors he killed someone and he had to leave town. We really don't know what happened to him. But yes, his father and all the males in his family were killed.
So let's talk about Leonardo da Vinci, because people are so fascinated by him and by his work. For one thing, had there been a paging system at the time, he would not have responded if someone had said, paging Mr. Da Vinci.
He would not. Da Vinci was a place. It was like saying Chris from Dallas or Elizabeth from Fort Worth. And so Da Vinci was not a last name as we think of last names. Last names were reserved for the wealthy and the powerful. And otherwise, he would have been Leonardo.
And by all accounts, he was gay. And that was okay with the system at the time. But you were not allowed to act on it, I guess.
You were not allowed to make it public. You were not allowed to make it known. And everyone kind of knew about it. But as long as it was very much don't ask, don't tell. It was very much you kept it a secret. He was actually put in danger as a young man. His name was listed as being homosexual. And that was very dangerous. If it was found out, if it was proved, if someone got it in against you and decided to make you suffer for that, you could be killed. It could be punishable by death. And he managed to escape that fate. There's some rumor or conjecture that that's why he left Florence. He left Florence soon after that to go to Milan. And that could have been to get away from that environment where he was under suspicion.
He had so many interests in different areas, art and science and spirituality. What,
yes.
What kind of education had he had?
Very little education. He would have been educated primarily at home. He might have gone to a local school. But he was not a nobleman. He was illegitimate. His father had more money than his mother, and he was raised primarily by his paternal grandfather, who seemed to care for him a great deal. But he would not have received an in-depth education. And so we have to assume that most of what he knew, he taught himself. He seems to have been a voracious reader. That we have his notebooks, not all of them, but there are probably more pages lost than we have, but there are nevertheless thousands of pages of notebooks. And sometimes you'll see lists, and they're lists of books. And we don't know if they're books he wanted to borrow or books he owned or books he had borrowed and needed to give back. We don't really know what those lists of books are. But he seemed to have been a voracious reader, so very self-educated.
But he didn't finish a lot of what he started.
He finished way less than he started. And he didn't even necessarily consider himself first and foremost an artist. There's a letter that he wrote to the Duke of Milan asking to be admitted to his service. It was sort of a job hunting letter. And the first thing he lists is military engineer. Then he lists musician. And then he lists regular architect. And then way down at the bottom of the list, you get, oh, and I paint.
I can do the Mona Lisa.
Yeah,
if you're interested.
If you've got time, I can do that too. He considered himself a scientist. He wouldn't have used that term, but he was very interested in science. He was interested in anatomy. And so he was very distracted. And there's a story that a famous noblewoman wanted him to paint her portrait. And she kept sending her servants, go get Leonardo to come paint my portrait. And they'd find him working on geometry. And he'd say, I'm too busy working on geometry. I may never paint again. And eventually he would finally get around to painting. But yes, he did. He had a terrible time finishing things. He'd leave them half done. Or he would experiment so much. He was always trying to come up with new paints, new ways of painting things, new ways of constructing things. They didn't always work. If anybody's gone to see The Last Supper, it's a mess. It's blurry. It's run together. The colors aren't right. It doesn't look anything like it looked the day he finished it. And it's his own fault. He tried to create a new paint base. It didn't work. And within his lifetime, or shortly thereafter, it was already described as ruined.
So it didn't fix properly.
Did not fix properly. The paint chipped off the walls or flaked off the walls. Because he wanted to do it differently. He had his own ideas.
And the Mona Lisa, which is, you know, the, I guess, most famous work of his, you point out she has no eyebrows.
She has no eyebrows. I read that and I thought, there's no way. I mean, how many times have you seen the Mona Lisa, you know, in illustrations or whatever? And you go look at it, and that woman does not have any eyebrows. It's very strange. They don't know why. They don't know if she had eyebrows and they were removed in some sort of cleaning accident or some sort of restoration. Yes, some sort of weird waxing accident, plucking accident. Or if she never had eyebrows because he never painted them in. You know, his other women of his have eyebrows. It doesn't seem to have been. There's some theory that it was a fashion of the time, but other paintings from the same year, the women have eyebrows. So who knows why the Mona Lisa does not have eyebrows. But
Elizabeth Lundy is my guest. Her new book is called Secret Lives of Great Artists. We'll be back to our discussion with her in a minute. If you have a question about an artist from just about any period, there's a good chance that Elizabeth can answer it for you. You can get on the line to ask at 1-800-933-5372. Right now, though, I'm with Jeff Whittington, who is the senior producer of Think and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. And we have another phone number for you.
We do, Chris. It's 1-800-456-5372. 800-456-5372. I'm following our leader.
I've heard you,
Jeff
guys,
Ramirez,
doing this,
with the, you know, just giving you the phone number as you dial. Maybe, you know, you can go ahead and get your phone out and flip it open, and in a minute or two we'll give you the number again when you're ready. We'll wait for you when you're ready to dial. But we are closing in very quickly, Chris, on the end of this membership campaign, and that means when we reach the $500,000 mark, it's over. And pretty confident that's going to happen within the next 24, 26, 29 hours or so.
Okay. We're taking bets now.
1-800-456-5372, online at KERA.org. We have raised over $30,000 today.
Wow.
So if you've waited, this is the moment to call. 1-800-456-KERA.
It's not outside the realm of possibility that we could finish this up today. It's unlikely, maybe, but
it's going to be tomorrow.
Every contribution makes a difference. We have copies of Elizabeth's book, which is so much fun. It's called Secret Lives of Great Artists. There's a subtitle, What Your Teachers Never Told You About Master Painters and Sculptors. And it's true. You know, I had a teacher in high school, and she had this book called, this was a nun, by the way, it was called One Night Stands with American History. Sister Lois used to whip this thing out, and when things started getting boring in American history, she would read a little bit of it, and it really got us interested again, because it was all these little bits of dirt, and I'm sure she carefully edited some of it. But this would be great, you know, if you've got a kid, or if you're a teacher and you really want to get them interested in art. Some of this stuff is really a lot of fun and really kind of gets you interested. And if you just love the works yourself, it's great to have all this other information. So we would love to give that to you with our compliments when you join at the $120 level today. You can do that with a credit card. You can set up a sustaining membership, or of course, if you really prefer, you can write us a personal check. But do call us at 1-800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org.
The book is available, of course, at your literature retailer of choice, I'm sure. And we're certainly not asking you to pay $120 for a really, it's really interesting, really entertaining work. But of course, we're making it easy for you. You can support your public radio station, which we'd really like for you to do, and get the book as a thank you gift all at the same time. It would be so great, Chris, if we could get close to $400,000 raised, and we are getting there. But I'd love to get really close during the Think Show today, so please call 1-800-456-KERA.
I'm always proud when Think listeners make these significant contributions. Yours only has to be whatever fits into your budget. You know, maybe you can do $20 or $30 a month. Maybe $5 a month is a stretch. Whatever you decide, that's up to you. But we do appreciate your support. 1-800-456-5372. Do it because you believe that public radio should be on the air.
1-800-456-KERA, just $117,000 left to raise. And the membership drive will cease instantaneously. So be next at kera.org. And thanks.
Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering flexible part-time graduate study. You can follow your passion at SMU and learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Fort Worth author Elizabeth Lundy. Her new book is called Secret Lives of Great Artists. If you'd like to receive a copy with our compliments, you can join KERA today at the $120 membership level. We will send that to you. You just have to call 1-800-456-5372 or go to kera.org and click support. If you want to be part of the conversation today, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. There are some great, it's almost a, not a comic book format, but you have some great line drawings as illustrations. Did it drive you crazy that you weren't able to put the pictures in the book of the original art because of, I guess, rights issues?
That was frustrating, yes. Some of the earliest art is available in the public domain because it's so old. But anything from the last, say, 100 years is controlled. And color reproduction is very expensive. The goal of the publisher is to keep this series of books in a very reasonable price range. So what we did, since print is expensive, pixels are cheap. So if you go to the website secretlivesofgreatartists.com, we have art from each of the artists, and particularly art that I've mentioned in the book. So feel free to check out that website, and there's just a section where it says check out the art, and you can see all of these paintings, the water lilies.
Perfect resource.
Yeah, absolutely. The water lilies and everything else.
So let's talk about Michelangelo for a while.
Certainly.
Is it the same issue with Leonardo? We know him as a first name artist, but in fact he had a surname.
He did have a surname, Buonarroti, and I hope I'm saying that right. I'm not an Italian scholar, but his family was descended from the nobility, or at least they believed they were, which is why they hung on to that last name. But generally people were known by their first names, so that's why we know him as Michelangelo.
And it's funny because we know him for creating some of the most beautiful images and items in the history of Western art, but you might not necessarily want to hang out with this guy.
He was a difficult person. One of the popes, Pope Leo the X, said Michelangelo is impossible and one cannot deal with him. He had a terrible temper. He was always raging and carrying on and very fiery. And he also did not believe in bathing. He thought it was bad for your health. We have actual letters where he says, don't bathe, and particularly don't get your head wet. This is just very bad news. And you have to think that when he was painting the Sistine Chapel, he was sharing a very small studio that had one bed with several assistants in a Roman summer. I think that has something to do with the fact his assistants always quit. I have no evidence for this. This is not art history at its best, but this is just my theory. I don't know that I would have stuck around working for this guy.
Elizabeth Lundy is my guest. Her book is called Secret Lives of Great Artists. Our number is 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we find Lori in Denton. Hi, Lori.
Hello. How are y'all today?
Great. Thank you.
Well, I'm doing well also. And I was curious to know, in 1989, I went to France and I toured the Loire River Valley castles. And one of the castles we went to, and I cannot remember the name of it, was where Leonardo da Vinci was the last 3 years of his life, I believe.
Yes.
And I believe there was rumors, the tour guide told us the reason why he went there was because he had murdered somebody in Italy and he fled to France. But my memory has escaped me, and I'm wondering if you could refresh my memory of what castle that was, because there was an exhibit about his inventions and there at the castle, and the story behind why he left Italy to France, if my memory is deceiving me. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, Lori, I'm afraid I'm going to have to disappoint you. As far as I know, there was no murder in Leonardo's past. He did go to the Loire Valley and stayed in a castle, and I'm sorry, I do not know the name of that castle. I bet you could find that online. But my understanding in all the biographies I read said that Leonardo left to go to France. He had been living in Rome, and the competition was really tight. He was living in Rome at the same time as Raphael and Michelangelo, and there was a lot of pressure on him to produce, and Leonardo did not like pressure. He really didn't like producing particularly, and so he had met the King of France. They had kind of bonded, and the King of France invited him to go there to serve as the king's painter, but really his job was just to provide conversation for the king. And the king loved to come down, and they would have scintillating conversation, and that was that. So I know of no murder. That's fascinating that you heard that. I do not know that story, so you've got me beat on that one, Laurie.
On the other hand, Caravaggio did murder someone, right?
Caravaggio did murder someone, yes, and spent the last bit of his life on the run. I had always understood it to be a duel. That is giving that murder way too much credit. It seemed to have been an out-and-out brawl with another Roman tough, and it was either over a tennis match or a bet over a tennis match, or they were near a tennis match. It's very unclear exactly what happened. But in any case, it was a brawl that involved several people. His opponent was killed, and Caravaggio had to get out of town and left Rome in a hurry and spent the rest of his time in the south of Italy and on the island of Malta.
So I don't mean to keep bringing everything back to the artist who did not bathe, but I was really interested to hear that Diego Rivera could only be convinced to engage in personal hygiene in like a bathtub full of rubber duckies.
Bathed by Frida Kahlo, yes. She made quite a ritual of it. Apparently that was the only way. I don't know why. He weighed over 300 pounds, too. So that's a lot of Diego, I think. who knows why that is. And yet he was irresistibly attractive to women. He was just seemed to have to fight them off, although he didn't fight them off. He was quite glad to welcome them. And so why he was so attractive is a deep mystery. But yes, Frida Kahlo had to bathe him with rubber duckies.
Those two had a very strange relationship. And I was also interested to hear what they had to do with the death of Leon Trotsky.
Very odd story. Yes, both were committed communists from way back. And Trotsky had been in Stalinist, in Russia, beginning founder of the Russian Revolution with Lenin and Stalin. He eventually fell out with Stalin. He and Stalin had a dispute, who knows over what. And Trotsky had to get out of Europe. He was on the Stalin's agents were after him. And Rivera heard about this and convinced the Mexican government to invite Trotsky to come to Mexico. So he ended up in Mexico City. He lived in Rivera's house. But while he was there, he went ahead and had an affair with Frida Kahlo, and which some have said might have been Kahlo's revenge on Diego Rivera having an affair with Kahlo's sister. So
this is like Desperate Housewives.
It's incredible. And so they had an affair. Eventually, Kahlo left to go on an art tour. She went to France for a tour. And at that point, somehow Rivera learned about the affair and was really angry about it, which is pretty irrational considering what he was doing at the same time, but that's okay. And so he kicked Trotsky out of his house, made Trotsky get his own house. And the house that Trotsky got did not have nearly as good a security as Rivera's house. And eventually Stalin's agents caught up with him and killed him. And Frida Kahlo was brought in for questioning as being involved in this. And it ended up actually bringing Kahlo and Rivera back together. They were temporarily separated.
<Of course.
laughs> Yeah, who knows? They were temporarily separated. And Rivera was horrified to learn she'd been questioned by the police. And he welcomed her back. And there you go. Love knows no bounds. What can I say?
Did Kahlo and Rivera ever collaborate, as you know?
Not that I know of. They certainly painted side by side. But I don't know of any straight collaborations. Their work was very different. Mostly Rivera saw his calling as a communist artist was to paint public murals to inspire people and did some really remarkable public art in and around Mexico as well as in the United States. He painted the San Francisco Stock Exchange and he painted I believe a headquarters of the Ford Company. The irony of a committed communist painting a stock exchange and a capitalist plant seems to have been lost on him.
Money talks, apparently.
Apparently so. Yes. Apparently so.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Elizabeth Lundy is my guest. Her new book is called Secret Lives of Great Artists. Can you talk for a minute about Rossetti and how he committed? He considered himself, I guess, a poet as much as an artist.
And he is studied in poetry classes today. If you take a Victorian era or previous to that poetry class, he's considered as much a poet as he is considered a artist. But he had some issues with his poetry. He was married to a young woman named Lizzie Seidel. I'm not exactly sure how to say her name. And he had met her. She was a beautiful, beautiful young woman. And in a great many of both his paintings and paintings of other Pre-Raphaelites, she is the face.
She's Ophelia.
She's Ophelia, yes, drowning Ophelia in a wet bathtub. She caught a terrible cold.
And later died of tuberculosis.
Yes, she had tuberculosis all along, unfortunately. So she had tuberculosis. She was very sick. She died. And Rossetti felt so terrible that he had not devoted himself to his wife, but instead had been working on poetry, that he bound up his poetry and in a great romantic gesture placed them in her coffin, which was a great, beautiful romantic gesture. And then a couple years went by.
Yeah, if the story had ended there.
Yeah. And he started thinking, well, I'd really like to publish those poems. And so he actually had to get an exhumation order from the bishop, and they dug up his dead wife and retrieved the poems, and he later published them, and they're studied to this day. I don't think most people know that backstory to the poetry they're reading.
We have an email from Bill in Dallas who says the Loire Valley Castle, and I'm sure I'll mispronounce this, was Chenonceau?
That's
Chenonceaux.
All right.
Or Chenonceau, I'm not sure. Now we'll have 15 emails telling me how I ought to have pronounced
how we should pronounce that, yes.
So now we know.
Now we know. Very good.
Leonardo was, and it sounds like it would be worth a visit, I guess, if they've got all those things.
It would probably
there.
Be beautiful. It would probably be just fantastic.
Is there a particular work that, and you said you have them all online, is there one that you think looks especially good online? You know, some things really translate well, and others are not as vibrant.
I would say, I'm trying to think, the larger paintings do not translate well.
Yeah.
Something like Picasso's Guernica is enormous. And so that does not translate particularly well. Anything really big is very difficult. I would say the smaller paintings, the still lifes, you can still get a pretty good sense of what you're looking at, such as a Cezanne of the card players. You can get a pretty decent sense of what it's really like. Obviously, it's not the same as seeing it in real life. And, of course, right now at the Kimball, they're having that wonderful impression as an exhibit. And I would, if you haven't gone to see it yet, you should go, because that's an amazing exhibit. And you can see some of these paintings in real life and see what the colors are really like and how vibrant they really are.
We'll talk in a minute about the first impressions of Impressionism.
Yes.
How that went over, because it might take people by surprise. Elizabeth Lundy is my guest. Her new book is called Secret Lives of Great Artists. It has dozens of stories of artists that you know, famous works that you know, and then the backstory, which is very interesting in many cases. If you would like to have a copy of this and also support KERA, you can make a $120 contribution to 1-800-456-5372 or go to kera.org. And if you want to scroll down and choose this as your thank you gift, we'd invite you to do so, and we'd be delighted to send it to you. Jeff Whittington is back, senior producer of the show. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And I did take a bath this morning.
Yes, I know. We want to be around you.
I did it without rubber duckies, and I washed my head.
I think your wife will be delighted to to confirm that.
No, you were talking about I think it's great, all the artist non-bathing stories.
I know. It seems like they have that in common, some of them.
So, if you appreciate that we're all clean and healthy here at KERA, and you want to keep the station healthy as well and support this kind of program, we kind of cover the waterfront on this show, and this is an example of a little bit more fun topic. We're thrilled to bring it to you every single day at noon, so please support it. Daniel Cantor in Dallas did so, Rosemary Conway in Fort Worth, and Cindy Brickman in Dallas. They've done their part. You be next at 1-800-456-5372.
We have raised more than $30,000 today. This is just amazing. And if you are one of the people who has called today or throughout the drive, we are very grateful. If you have yet to make your call, we would love to hear from you right now. 1-800-456-5372 is the number, or you can go to kera.org. It is nice. Jeff and I feel the same way. Some days we have a lot of fun. In the next hour, we're going to talk to someone who wrote a memoir about his psychic father and growing up with his father, who was a psychic healer throughout his childhood. And the story is amazing. Other days, we have much more serious topics. We have John Zogby, the pollster, coming on later this week.
Yep.
I'm excited to come to work every day. I drive faster on my way in than on my way out because it's so much fun to work here. We hope that the show is fun for you. Sometimes it's very informative. And we're just pleased to be able to bring it to you because you're the ones who pay for it. Your support makes this show possible. 1-800-456-5372 is the number. You can have a copy of Elizabeth Lundy's book with a $120 contribution. This is one of those books you will buy to give to someone else and decide to keep for yourself. And then you will, perhaps you get this copy from us as a thank you, and then you'll run out to the bookstore and get another three copies to give away.
Yeah, it's available at your favorite book retailer online. You can probably find it in stores as well, I'm sure. But we thought it would be fun to offer it to you today. When you become a member of KERA, the $120 membership level just works out to $10 a month. You can actually work it out to $10 a month and become a sustaining member of the station where you set it up. It's sort of a bank draft membership plan. You might not even miss the $10 a month when it comes out of your account, and your membership will always be current, and you'll know that you're helping KERA every single month meet the responsibilities that the station has to pay the bills for national programs, for the electric bill that to run a radio station, the equipment, maintenance, and just keeping things working here at the station. The station has all the same expenses that you do at home or that your business does. So that's why we're asking you to support it, because 53%, 53 cents of every dollar spent bringing you this radio service comes directly from you. You can contribute at 1-800-456-5372. And Chris, we're counting down this membership campaign. There's just, and I do mean just, $117,000 left to raise.
Well, you know, we have been talking a lot about ending it by tomorrow. We're really hoping for this. And part of the reason that this goal for us is so big is that that will mean we're done before October. So we've hoped to be able to have it out of the way by the end of September so that we could bring you all of October and a couple little days in November before the elections without having to interrupt for fundraising. Our delight would be to do that. We will need to keep fundraising until we've raised enough money to continue according to our budget that we have set out very carefully. But you can make it possible for us to finish this up by tomorrow by calling 1-800-456-5372 or going to kera.org.
You know, Chris, the boss and I, Jeff Ramirez, were on the air this morning. We're talking about finishing the drive, and we got a $3,000 pledge at about 6:20 in the morning. And then a couple of hours later, we were talking about it, finishing the drive, finishing strong, larger gifts. Someone called in with a $5,000 pledge.
Well, so get Ramirez back in here.
Hey, what makes you think it was Ramirez? No, so we know you're out there, and we know that you can afford to join responsibly and at a level that's right for you. Maybe that's not the right level, but is there a level that's right for you? Please call.
Whether it's $5,000 or $5 a month, you make that decision. But we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-456-5372, or you can go online to kera.org. You can also join with a sustaining membership, or you can use your credit card. That makes it quick and easy for us. We put your money to work right away. Thanks for calling.
Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering flexible part-time graduate study. You can follow your passion at SMU and learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Our guest this hour is Elizabeth Lundy. Her new book is called Secret Lives of Great Artists. This is packed with interesting facts, and we should point out that there is also sort of useful information in here as well. This is not only one-night stands with American history quality information. There's everything is kind of wrapped up in a little biography of the artist that you actually, you know, sort of could take to the bank. If you would like to have a copy and support KERA, you can call 1-800-456-5372 and make a contribution of $120 or more, or you can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So we were talking a moment ago about the Impressionists.
Yes.
And now they're so beloved, and you put that word anywhere and people just flock. There are pictures of people
crowds.
Lined up outside.
Yes.
The Kimball. But that was not always the case.
It was very much not the case at the beginning. They were considered intransigents. People were advised not to bring their unmarried daughters to these exhibits because they might be corrupted by this dreadful art. People genuinely did not know how to look at this art and see it. you know, and if I think if you were to go to the Impression exhibit at the Kimball right now, I think before you go into that exhibit, take 5-10 minutes and go through the permanent collection and look at the art that came before. And the art that came before, if you wanted to draw a building, you drew a building. You drew an outline and you drew a window and you drew a balcony and you drew stairs. And if you wanted to draw a person, you drew a person and they had a head and it was all very recognizable. The Impressionists, if they wanted to draw a balcony, they drew a blue line and a little purple squiggle and a person's a little black dot. Well, really, if you stand back and unless you're squinting on something, that's what the world really looks like. But people were so used to seeing the world according to these very precise, defined conventions of art that seeing it in any other way was just incomprehensible. They did not know what they were looking at, and they found it shocking and appalling.
We know that Van Gogh saw things a very different way.
Yes.
And you, he had all kinds of problems. But
poor guy.
One of which was that he would eat his own paints.
Apparently so. When he was insane, he would eat his own paints. And which was particularly bad because there were a lot of new paints that were developed along with the Industrial Revolution. And one difference between the Impressionists and previous artists is they had such brighter pigments available to them, these brilliant reds and brilliant greens that were new. These were new paints that were available, which was wonderful. But many of them were very, very toxic. There was one called Emerald Green or Paris Green, and it had two uses. It was a rat killer, and it was a paint pigment. And this was Van Gogh's favorite green. If you've ever seen a Van Gogh landscape or still life with flowers, and there's that green that just jumps off the canvas. It's just incredibly brilliant. Well, it's copper and arsenic. And just getting it on your skin is bad for you, let alone consuming it orally. And that's what
washed
the poor
down
man
with
did.
Absinthe.
Yeah, apparently so. Yes, he seemed to be what he survived on, that and black coffee. So, yeah, poor guy. I mean, he was in bad shape to begin with, but combine the arsenic with it, and this is bad news.
And it's so sad that even when he took his own life, he sort of wasn't able to do that in an efficient manner.
No.
That's a horrible phrase to even use, but he suffered horribly.
He did. He shot himself. He tried to shoot himself in the heart, and he missed. And the bullet lodged in his side. It took him 2 days to die. It's just awful. The one good thing was his brother was able to come from Paris and be with him. But, you know, it was just terrible. Poor Vincent. He couldn't even get that right, you know. Unfortunate life.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. The book is called Secret Lives of Great Artists, and author Elizabeth Lundy is here. Jackson Pollock could not draw.
He could not draw. He complained he couldn't draw. He had a terrible time. He would go to art classes, and he took a lot of art classes. We shouldn't think he was untrained. He just had a terrible time drawing. And that's where they start you. That's where you're started, is with draftsmanship and drawing. And he just had a terrible time. And he could not master that skill. And so he really struggled with it. And one of the things that he so loved about his drip paintings is the control he exhibited. And we look at those paintings and you think he just splattered paint on them. And that's not it at all. There's actually a film of him painting.
Over glass, basically.
Over glass, right? Yes. And he is controlling every molecule of paint exactly where it will go. And it gave Pollock enormous satisfaction because that he could control. He couldn't control the pencil, but that he could control.
Also could not control his drinking.
Ever. Could not control his drinking. Although you have to wonder at some of the medical advice he received, the yeah. Medical treatments that these poor people, you know, it's just awful when you go through the history of all these folks that they were, you know, bled and given horrible drugs. But Jackson Pollock had a terrible drinking problem. And he went to a doctor one time and the doctor said, well, every time you want to drink, here I'm going to give you an unlimited prescription for tranquilizers. And so, strangely, that worked for about a year. But then he fell off the wagon, and really that's eventually what killed him. He died in a car crash, but he was drinking and ran into a tree. So, sad story.
We have to find someone who's got a happy ending here. this ends up happily, I suppose. Picasso went to jail for a while.
Yes.
What was he doing there?
He became implicated in the theft of the Mona Lisa. Going back to Mona Lisa from the beginning of the hour, he was friends with a poet named Guillaume Apollinaire, famous French poet, who had befriended a kind of a con artist who had a bad habit of sneaking into the Louvre and sneaking out with statues, just We don't know why. He just apparently got a kick out of it. And he had given one of these statues, or a couple of these statues, to Apollinaire, who thought, hey, my friend Picasso will like these. And he happened to lift one of these statues 2 or 3 days before the Mona Lisa was stolen. And then the con artist decided, maybe I can get a reward for this somehow. He doesn't seem to have been the brightest of fellows. So he went to the French police and said, I actually stole these to prove how bad the security was at the Louvre. I don't think anybody believed him. He implicated Picasso and Apollinaire, and they were both arrested and spent a couple weeks in jail and were questioned about the Mona Lisa. They didn't know a thing about it, and the police figured that out pretty quickly, and they were finally let go. But so strange that this 20th century master was somehow implicated, even so incidentally, with that earlier theft.
I think the greatest example of like postmodern irony in your entire book is the fact that Andy Warhol did a guest spot on The Love Boat, the place that gave everyone their final 15 minutes of fame.
You have no idea how happy that made me.
Did you watch it as a kid? Because I don't remember seeing that episode.
I don't remember seeing the episode at all. I was reading the biography of Warhol, and I got to that line, and I called my editor. I said, you will not believe.
Stop the presses.
I have the best anecdote of all time. Yes, he did a guest stint on The Love Boat. I haven't been able to find it on YouTube or anything. I did find a plot description, and he was on The Love Boat and in a silver wig with his entourage, and the other guests were Marion Ross, a.k.a. Mrs. Cunningham. And Tom Bosley.
Mr. Cunningham.
They were not playing the Cunninghams, but they were playing a Midwestern couple. And it turned out that in Marion Ross's deep, dark secret past, she had been one of Andy Warhol's girls, and she didn't want her husband to find out. So, true story, this all really happened. I find it amazing.
And I guess I must be the only person ever not to figure this out. I didn't realize that Andy Warhol's hair was always a wig.
Yes, from the time he was in his 20s or 30s, his hair started to fall out. He couldn't handle that. And so he wore a wig, silver wig.
Do you know why he chose that particular style?
You know, he dressed all in black, and so it was this monochrome look. I don't know exactly why he picked that look, but that was his look. He wore black pants, black leather jacket, black t-shirt, silver wig.
Not many of us can carry that look off.
Not many people. And he was very, very pale. Mm-hmm. So it was very striking looking. He was all about the image. He was all about the image and the impression. And it wasn't about reality. It was about the image.
Yeah, and sort of carefully crafted his image.
Very carefully crafted. Very carefully crafted. And crafted all that around him. He had this very dispassionate view of the world. You know, all this chaos would be happening around him. And he would just be standing back with a camera or watching it all happen, and sometimes almost to a creepy degree. One of his followers either committed suicide or was an accident, but jumped off a several story building and died while high on LSD. And Warhol's response was, why didn't he tell me? We could have gone and filmed it.
Wow.
Which is chilling, just chilling. And, you know, I don't know what you make of that. He had this very odd view of life.
Do you have a story we haven't touched on that is your favorite one to tell out of the book?
Oh, that's a great question.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but sometimes there's that final thing.
That's a great question. I'll tell you one thing that really surprised me, and that's about Edward Hopper, who painted the lighthouses and the city straits. He painted that famous Nighthawks painting. He and his wife had an incredibly violent relationship. He actually beat up on his wife, and she beat him right back up in return.
And would boast about it, I guess.
They would just go both do battle. And considering he was over 6 feet tall and she was about 4'9" and weighed about 100 pounds, it was quite the sight. So, you know, you see these beautiful, peaceful landscapes, and no, there was a lot going on in the background.
I guess that's the case with just about everybody in this book. Oh, by the way, Jeff Whittington has found, I guess, is this from YouTube?
Jeff Ramirez found the Andy Warhol appearance on The Love Boat on YouTube.
I can't believe I'm saying this. Are we putting this on our website?
Yeah, we'll link to that.
That is wonderful, because I had not seen that. that was not there a year ago when I last looked.
Well, you know, you got to keep up, Elizabeth.
Man.
This is for the second edition of your book.
I cannot wait. I will link to that from the book's website.
And I guess you're working on one now about composers for the
Secret
same
Lives of Great Composers. Yes, absolutely.
We'll look forward to that.
Mendelssohn.
Yeah, please come back.
Handel and Wagner and all the rest.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
The book is called Secret Lives of Great Artists. We have it available for you with our compliments when you join the station today at the $120 level or above, 1-800-456-5372. Of course, we know lots of you join the station and say, I'll go out and buy the book myself, just put all my money toward my membership and content. That's fine as well. However you choose to do it, your participation, though, really matters. And honest to God, it makes a difference.
It does. We've said it so many times, but 53% of the budget for the station comes directly from your contributions. That's why it's so important that you think about how much time you spend listening to the station, to this show, perhaps in particular. Maybe this is your midday soundtrack every day. And we know there are many of you who call in regularly or write in regularly who that is indeed the case. So perhaps it's worth $5 a month or $10 a month to help support this kind of programming. There isn't another place where you can find shows like this show that we're really proud to work on, and to represent you and think about what you might be interested in hearing about. There aren't too many places in the radio landscape, in the media landscape, where you can really find that kind of radio. So this is really the only place you're going to find it in Dallas, and we think it's worth your support. Hopefully you do too, and we'll call 1-800-456-KERA.
Who else will go from introducing you to ambassadors and heads of state and important leaders and analysts and then also tell you how to find Andy Warhol on the Love Boat? This is something you can only find here.
I can't wait to see this. I almost blew off the pledge break just to go look at it.
1-800-456-5372 is the number to call. We have $116,500 left to raise. We can bring that number lower. And you know, maybe you think, well, my contribution is $75 or $50 or, you know, $200. It still makes a difference. And there is this, I think we overuse the word momentum around here. But you know, when you make your contribution, then other people think, oh, it's going quicker now, and I'm going to call in. And it really does have an impact. So give us a call right now and make a contribution, because you believe public radio is something that ought to exist in a community of people who are going to be voting and making choices and just living in the world. 1-800-456-5372 is the number. You can also set up your membership online at kera.org.
And of course, when you join today or really any time, you can choose to receive as your thank you gift the $120 membership level, your very own copy of Secret Lives of Great Artists, What Your Teachers Never Told You About Master Painters and Sculptors. We heard a lot of the stories. We didn't really even get into a lot of the Seurat, Edvard Munch. We got a little bit into Picasso in the show, but you didn't talk about Dürer or Goya. Some of these stories we've heard before on the show with different folks, but not like this. And you can get your very own copy of this book when you join at the $120 membership level. I won't lie to you, Chris, this book retails for $16.95. And we thought that Elizabeth would make a great guest. She did. It was a great conversation. Hopefully you enjoyed it as well. And if you liked it, go get it. You know, it's $16.95. We do ask that you think about supporting the station. You can do that at any level. Maybe $60 is the right level for you. That's $5 a month. But if you want to join the station and get this book as your thank you gift, we can do that for you at the $120 membership level.
1-800-456-5372. Want to thank Carmen in Denton, Terry Irwin in Dallas, William Lemoir in Waxahachie, and anyone who is on the line now, like David and Donna Martin in Fort Worth, Les Anthony in Dallas, Corinne Jones Moore in Plano. Didn't move up the paper in time to see the hyphen. Thanks to all of you. And if you've already made a contribution or if you are a member in good standing right now, of course, we extend our thanks to you as well. You will be supporting your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, and online at kera.org, K261 CW 100.1 in Tyler, K202 DR 88.3 in Wichita Falls, and K257 EV 99.3 in Sherman.
We're being shown the number $15,500. I bet that's $115,500 left to raise in the membership campaign. Okay, there we go.
Wow. I was about to get really excited. Yeah, I'm still excited.
Me too. I was thinking, well, let's end it right now. $115,500 left to raise. Many of you wait till the last day. And you know what? We're just glad that you're going to support the station tomorrow, because I'm telling you, I think tomorrow's going to be the last day. There is an end the drive by 7 p.m. tomorrow challenge grant on the table. I think it got added. The total on that challenge grant was added to in the last few hours. But I know there is a significant significant challenge grant on the table. If we end the drive by 7 p.m. tomorrow, KERA will receive an additional monies from some very, very supportive friends and listeners and members of KERA. It is a $2,750
wow.
challenge grant. So once we reach the goal, we have to reach it by 7 p.m. tomorrow, which is totally doable. I mean, $115,000, we've raised that much in a day before, easily, ending at 7 o'clock. But if you can call right now or go online right now to KERA.org and make your gift, you'll help us get that much closer to getting there by tomorrow at 7.
1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, supporting the station financially because it's a service you use. And you might think, well, you know, I use it, but I've got all these other things to do. I was thinking about my own budget, and I'm quite cheap, but, you know,
frugal. I think frugal is
the
word.
Thrifty.
Yes.
But, you know, I'll occasionally buy things and then not end up using them. You know, you buy a pair of shoelaces and then you realize you didn't need them after all, or you just hang on to things. Just total that up in your mind and think about the things you pay for that you never use, and then think how much you use KERA.
Yeah, you're already using KERA every single day, perhaps. It's your station. It's worth your support. 1-800-456-5372.
Remember, you can also become a member online at KERA.org. You can pay there with a credit card or a debit card. You can also set up a sustaining membership, and you can do that by calling our volunteers, or you can set it up online. You'll get the form. Thanks for calling.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.